This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2023 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us for Socialism 2024, which will be held in Chicago next Labor Day weekend, August 30th through September 2nd. It's never too early to make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
So, hey everyone. So I'm Hélène. I'm an activist from the New Anti-Capitalist Party, NPA, in France. It's an organization of the far left in France, and I'm really glad to be here with my comrades and with all of you to discuss what happened in France, but also really to have the discussion together afterwards, because from what I've seen this weekend, there's lots of topics that are obviously very similar and that should be discussed together. So I will try to give an overview of two main struggles that took place this spring in France and the political lessons we can draw. So one is the huge movement we had against the pension reform in France. Maybe you've heard of it. And the second one is riots that started on the 27th of June when Naël Merzouk, a young 7-year-old young man from North African origin, was shot by the police. So Naël lived in the banlieue, we say, so that's the suburbs around Paris, where we cram, or the government cram a lot of people into projects. And he was killed by the police while he was just driving around with two friends. So to finish, maybe if we have time, we could get to the subject of Niger, because there was a coup and then another coup in Gabon a few days later. So obviously it's very interesting for us because it's directly French imperialism, but also for US because the US imperialism is growing and growing in this region too. So if we have time, we'll discuss it or then in the discussion, however you want. So it seems to be a wide range of topics, but actually those two or three events are deeply connected. And I think it's a great opportunity to take some perspective and put them all, explain them all a little together. So I'll start by going briefly back in time, just briefly, because I'm not sure everyone is familiar with the political situation in France, and that's completely normal. As you might know, Macron, the president, has been re-elected last year for his second term. He and his politics are widely rejected. He's seen as the president of the rich. That's really written on walls, not everywhere in France, but in lots of cities. During his first term, we had the Yellow Vest movement, a kind of popular movement against high fuel prices that burst apart from the trade unions. And we also had long strikes of transportation workers, students in the universities, etc. But despite the hatred Macron inspires, especially in the working class, many people voted for him on the second round of the election to avoid his far-right opponent to win. And that's actually the tactic of presidents lately in France for 20 years now, because Marine Le Pen is the leader of a far-right party, the National Front, which has been for a long time marginalized, but who is growing in terms of votes and influence. So Macron made her, Le Pen, his major rival in order to provoke like a reaction, electoral reaction, to vote, if not for him, against her. And so he got elected. So he was elected, but without any real support from the population. And he faces huge opposition. And for good reasons, low wages, inflation, housing difficulties, climate change, bad working conditions, etc., etc. But also sometimes for bad reasons, because xenophobia and racism is distilled by the media and the power in a very big way. So, but this year, the working class showed its opposition to Macron by marching on the street during 6 months against a new reform against the pension system. Macron's plan was to make us work 2 more years. Plain and simple. The main reason was to make people work longer, or even that more of them die before even reaching retirement. And that was pretty clear. So it was a rather gloom project, which everybody saw as such. From the beginning, and that's really rare, 80% of the population was against this reform from the beginning. And obviously, you can see why. It's a huge attack on the working class. Already a quarter of poor men die before reaching retirement in France. And it was a reform. And so they wanted to still postpone the age of retirement. And even against women, that was a really violent attack because already women earned 40% less as pension as men in France. So it was kind of a personal challenge in the end for Macron. He wanted to show the capitalists that he was able to lead a widely rejected reform, whatever the cost. Well, challenge accepted. What we have experienced in the last 6 months or so is really hard to sum up, but I try it for you guys. For 6 months, we had strikes, not only in the public sector, but in the heart of industry, like automobile, chemical industry, pharmaceutical industry, etc., etc. We had millions marching on the street, precisely 3 million at the same time at the peak of the movement, which hadn't been seen since decades in France. We had no oil for weeks because of refineries workers' strike. Okay, not everybody was really happy about that, but still. With pretty much a lot of support, even in this condition. We had universities mobilized and organizing demonstrations. We had people following each minister of the government, hitting on pots and pans to make noise. It's really weird, new French tradition, but it seems very effective in putting their life miserable, so good to know. We had entire football stadiums, soccer stadiums, shouting, booing the president at the second he showed his face. And we had maybe you saw the picture, we had such a garbage worker strike that we had piles of garbage in Paris for weeks. Everywhere, the bourgeoisie was really disgusted. We were pretty glad, but and plus the garbage are very easy to lit up during demonstrations, so you can see the escalation that it made. And we had also, with this strike, great videos of garbage workers who are calling on politicians on TV set and telling them in front of them, telling, okay, come do my job for at least one day, and then we'll see if you want to work 2 years more. So it was really moments, unreal, like, seriously, where you could touch like the dignity and the power of working class. So to sum up, it was an incredible determination. But in spite of all that, and I will stop the suspense right there, we lost. He passed the law. He passed the reform. We lost, but the government didn't actually really win. So there's that. The movement made Macron's popularity even smaller. And he said in himself, the strikes were too limited to force him to withdraw his bill. But still, the working class faced up with the government from January to June. So how did it go and why did we lose? I try to sum it up. There were 3 main obstacles in this movement. First, the repression, of course. Second, way deeper, the role of the union leaderships. And 3, the reformist left who offered only dead ends to the movement. So I'm going to try to speak a little about these 3 obstacles. So first one, repression. After 3 months of demonstration, the anger started to blow and to spill over. And Macron answered by a brutal police violence. He sent new police squads gave them full permission to restore orders. We couldn't say that his power lies into the police. France is not a dictatorship yet. But he needed the cops as much as he lost the little support he had. So it was violence against demonstrations, many injured, many scared. I can remember very vividly to have to take refuge in halls of buildings because through the fog of tear gas you can see squads of police marching towards you, hitting on their shields, like really like movies, quoi. So, thank God we had some experience in the last year, so we're kind of getting used to it, but you never completely used to it. There was violence against strikers, and that's, of course, the biggest problem. For example, in order to requisition the refineries, oil refineries workers, the government mobilized laws that were made for war times, actually. So for a labor law teacher like me, it's pretty striking in the most sense. So the government completely trampled the right to strike in many of the sectors. For example, also the garbage workers, they were doing blockades in front of their garages with our help also from militants and activists and students, etc. And every because the bosses were replacing workers, which you're not supposed to do legally in France. And every morning, the police was coming and wiping us out of in front of the garages because it had to end, quoi. The strike had to end. So really huge attacks on strike rights. And there was violence. Enfin, even, just last thing, even today, the strikers are widely repressed, and that's pretty crazy because we can see many dismissals of workers that have been striking, even in hospitals, which was really rare before for striking reasons. And lots of strikers are summoned to police stations even now. For example, electricians who organized the whole operations to cut off power into the homes of ministers or into government buildings, which was pretty funny too. But now, like, they're summoned to the police stations months after the strike. And last, there was violence also against students. There was a week, we just spent the whole week shouting in front of police stations, free our comrade, but really the whole week, because every time one was getting out, a bunch of them was taking back from the police from another demonstration, and we had to go back, and bref. So it was really a crazy violence against those who mobilized. But more than repression, even more than repression, it's the role of the union leaderships who has been one of the main obstacles in this movement. What you must understand is that since the beginning of the struggle, it was very political. It was not just against a shitty reform. It was really against, from lots of people, against the system, actually, against Macron, the president of the rich, against exploitation, against low wages, etc. Why? Because the COVID crisis and inflation had made really visible, very clear, that on one hand you had the impoverishment of the working class, and on the other hand you had crazy fortunes of big capitalists. And still the government was saying that there is no money for pension, wages, unemployment benefits, or public services, etc., etc. So the anger was way larger than this reform. And the struggle was also fed by many strikes for wages. We had an official inflation of 7% in France, but the basic products, that was 20% or so increase. So crazy prices. And still very few wage increase, only in the companies where there had been strike. In the public sector, the government at the end, in July, gave 1.5% increase of pay. So it gives you an idea. So there were strikes in the public sector and in the industry a lot during this movement. So right away, the link was made between the condition of the working class, its exploitation, and the pension reform. I found again some slogans to give you an idea. For example, it was written on lots of boards, "We won't die for the bosses." Or they're pushing back the retirement age and advancing the age of death. So every time the link was really made. But in spite of all that, the trade unions' leaderships, instead of organizing a wide movement that could lead to general strike, called workers to strike meticulously one day a week, or even one day every 2 weeks. Never an unlimited strike, which was truly needed. Like, okay, let's strike. Lots of people were saying, let's strike, and we'll go back to work only when our demands are met, when they take back the reform. Like, it was very logical for lots of people. But no, the union leadership were constantly imagining this kind of calendar that you have one day, and then 2 weeks, you're going to have another day, and then in 2 weeks, another day, et cetera, et cetera. So I swear that even for a revolutionary for a long time, who perfectly knows the role of union leadership under capitalism, it was kind of heartbreaking to see all this energy fade into nothing because of them. It was ridiculous at some point. But obviously, it also shows, and that's why I try to remember, that the day workers are going to be able to outflank those leaderships, the energy that is going to be unleashed is pretty impressive. So what was tricky for us as activists and revolutionaries was that the unions, the leadership, did everything to sound radical. In the speech, they were so radical, we will never give up, etc., etc. But actually, the more they betrayed the movement, the more radical they sounded. Like, so they were united, it was an intersyndical who led the movement, which means the five main unions in France that are called representative were leading together this movement. And they were presenting this unity as a combative spirit, whereas actually it was used by the CGT. CGT is the most, let's say, combative union that is linked historically to the Communist Party, even if its head has always been very compatible with the capitalist system, huh? But it's a combative union. And the CGT was using this unity to say, we can't do much more because otherwise we're going to lose the unity with unions that are less combative, etc. So that was really like the excuse to put brakes on the movement. So they kept answering to the invitations of the government. Well, there was nothing to discuss, obviously, only like strikes to build. They were begging the government to reinstall a good social dialogue or to ask the government to ask the bosses to increase the wages, whereas the government, the state, is the first one to not increase wages because in the public sector it's a disaster and they do understaffing and cuts and all of that. So obviously it was absurd. And the government, to explain, to justify himself, told us that no, we shouldn't increase the wages because that would push up price. I don't know if you had this in the US, the spiral of prices, wages, they call it like this, where like tons of economists who came in the media to explain that no, we can't have wages, better wages because it's going to increase the prices. Whereas, actually, it was pretty obvious that it was the profits that were increasing the inflation and the prices like crazy. And the proof of that is that now even the mainstream media says it because it's become too blatant that obviously it's because of the profits. So even the state, the media was like justifying it like this. So in all that, the union's leadership really played a nasty role to such an extent that, for example, at the Congress of the CGT that took place right in the middle of the movement, the speech of one of our comrades, she works in the chemical industry, and so she was intervening in the Congress, and she said to the national secretary of the CGT in front of everyone, nobody gave you a mandate? To go and negotiate with the government. We have to build the strike, and that's all, and we shouldn't do anything else. And this speech had a tremendous impact because I think she just said what a lot of people, a lot of workers and combative activists or unionists feel. So in the end, for some workers, it was a demonstration, once again, that unions' leaderships are made to be partners of the government and the bosses. Oh, in France, they're even called corps intermédiaire, which means intermediate bodies. So I think the expression is great because it's really like buffers between capital and labor. Okay? It's meant like this. So bosses are well aware. It was a hard lesson learned in France in 36 and 68, well, those general strikes, that trade unions can be invaluable social shock absorbers, provided that they have the clout in the working world to control, supervise, or even stop strikes, which happened in many times in the history in France. So we come to the third obstacles now. It's like, it's the policies that had the reformist left parties. What did they do? So the parties like La France Insoumise, which of Mélenchon, which translates to the insubordinate France, or the Socialist Party, which almost doesn't exist anymore because it betrayed so much. But these parties, what did they do? They actively defended dead-end solutions. It was really clear in this movement. For example, since Macron has no majority in parliament, he can't pass the reforms he wants. He has to either find alliance with other parties or to go through an institutional tool that is called the 49-3. It's an article of the Constitution, the 49.3. And so it enables him to just pass the law he wants without the parliament. And after 3 months of very active movement, Macron had to use this article of the Constitution to pass his reform. But during all the time that was building to this point, this reformist left was explaining that we should pull all our forces in trusting them, basically, because they were convincing the deputies to block this procedure, that everything was going to happen in the parliament, and that the important was not strikes or movements, but this opposition in parliament. In the end, Macron made it, so he passed his reforms through this article, and at 3 p.m. on the 16th of March, the government announced it, and it was really crazy because at this time, all the WhatsApp groups, you know, we're all like in the movement, and Signal and Telegram and whatever, lit up, and everybody was saying, okay, let's stop work, let's go down to the street, let's demonstrate, we have to have a reaction and all. So at that point, we were able to play a pretty good role because with the use of the NPA had called from a gathering on a huge square in front of the parliament that night. So in the end, it was not only students, but everybody gathered at this square and like was able to demonstrate in front of it because the police had prohibited all kinds of other demonstrations that you could do this day if they weren't planned. So to sum up, the reformist left said exactly the opposite than what was needed. It kept explaining we should trust democratic institutions and put our fate in their hand or in their opposition in parliament that was going to block this article of the Constitution. On the contrary, the movement needed desperately to take its fate in its own hand and decide. We had nothing to hope for in this so-called democratic institution. So in a way, Macron made the demonstration that relying on this institution is hopeless because he passed without the parliament. Of course, the end of illusions in democratic institutions can translate into resignation, but it's a risky play by his side, because it can also lead to the will to fight. And in the end, Macron has done maybe part of our job by proving that to win, we'll have to attack really the power of the bourgeoisie itself, which has become quite visible without this democratic screen that Macron uplifted whenever he wanted. So it leads to what the revolutionaries tried, we tried, and some other groups. We had to convince colleagues and workers elsewhere to organize themselves in order to take the leadership on their strike and outflank the union's leadership. So basically self-activity and like self-organization. So general assemblies were at the workplaces, open to everyone, through strike committees where workers can, regardless if they're a union member or not, participate and try to vote and decide for their strike. Because it's the only way for workers to decide themselves. And without that, as we saw, the union's leadership keep all the control and does not really organize the strike. So we try to encourage strike to go as far as possible, but also to coordinate them. Because isolated strikes is something the bosses can work with, in a way. It's even a way to get the pressure out of the pot, as we say. What they really fear is coordinated strikes, like efforts to unite different struggles. So we try to build coordinations or general assemblies, but for workers of different sectors that would come together and discuss the strike. And we had some real successes, but limited, of course, otherwise it would have been different. But what was really clear is that this movement was built, we say, on the shoulder of the last one, that there was a kind of escalation, 2016, 2009, the yellow vest, and then this, that there was an kind of advancement of the class consciousness, which was pretty, like, you could pretty much touch or feel. So that was the context in which Nahel death happened, so I'm going to turn to the second part of this presentation and talk about the riots that took place in France. But it's really linked, as you're going to see. The policeman who killed him was a member of one of those new police squads famous for the violence they committed against demonstrators a few weeks before. And that cop had been honored for his behavior against the Yellow Vest 5 years earlier. So it was really crazy. He was also a former member of a police unit which is so racist and violent that even the leadership of the police in France discussed to suppress it. And finally, they didn't. They kept it. But there were so many abuses that it was really a discussion at some point to suppress it. So the killing of a 7-year-old young man at the bottom of a project in Nanterre, west of Paris, where I did my law, as we discussed earlier, was neither a coincidence nor the blunder of a single policeman. Such a murder would have been unthinkable in a rich neighborhood. In the USA, I'm sure you know it even better than us, police violence against poor non-white people is a component of capitalist society. For many reasons, the bourgeoisie and their repressive forces mistreat some parts of the working class. In France, migrants or people with immigration background are systematically controlled, arrested, beaten, or even killed by the police. It was 40 murders in 2 years, the last 2 years, that happened like that. The French police has a long colonial history of abuses and assassinations, for instance, against Algerian people. Nowadays, the police leaders and Macron tolerate racism and violence, especially as they need their troops in a turbulent political or social context. So Niall's death is not an isolated case, rather another name on a long list. But the shooting of Niall was filmed, and that's where you see the importance also of that. Because 3 years ago, Macron even tried to pass a law forbidding people to film the police. He was forced to get back, to back off, because of the protest it created. But the point was to protect the police from legal charges in such situations. The video of Niall murder went viral on social media, as it should, and it launched a huge revolt of poor young inhabitants of suburban projects, burning cars and buildings, attacking the police with fireworks and looting shops. This is what the press and the government called riots. So we prefer to call it revolts, obviously, because you can see why. But the choice of word is not like the main issue. Of course, these riots have a social and political background. It's a kind of revolt of a fraction of the working class. And it's not the first time, either in France or in the rest of the world. Of course, in the US here with George Floyd's murder in 2020, or in France the last time was 2005, where two young men who fled the police died. But at that time it lasted 2 weeks. This time it lasted 5 days, but it was way bigger and with a much deeper impact. So this year, at first, Macron supported the policeman, but the crime was so obvious and the anger so important that he tried to calm things down, but he failed. On the Thursday, thousands of people marched in Nanterre to pay tribute to Niall, amongst which we were, obviously, and the march ended in a fight between the youth and the police at the police station. A few hours later, riots occurred again across the whole country. So then the government mobilized 45,000 policemen, just for that, including anti-gang like your SWAT, I think, or counter-terrorist units even, and even shut down public transportations at night in many of the cities of France, so a kind of curfew in the transport system. So there were riots in many cities, even in small towns, and the police was overwhelmed and sometimes had to retreat, like we saw a video of a really big retreat of the police. Many police stations, city halls, and other public buildings were set on fire, and thousands of cars were burned, and we had fireworks for 3 days all night long, which was kind of nice in a way. An important far-right police union said the cops were at war against the vermine publicly, and he claimed full support by the government. Well, guess what? It did. The government supported him, no problem, no denunciation of the racist speeches, etc., and gave it free rein to restore order with the police. So Everybody did condemn it except the far right and the government. So we organized the demonstration in the center of Paris with other organizations of the far left. And it was prohibited by the police, which is like crazy when you have absolutely no reasons. But of course, we did it anyway. So that was a good like step to talk about the riots and to defend this anger. But after 1 week, the movement began to decrease due to brutal and blind police repression. You should imagine it was really like police patrolling in the streets everywhere, shooting rubber bullets by sight, beating and arresting thousands of young men for nothing else than being a poor man, non-white men, or even white men, because that's what we saw. It was very diverse, the population taking part to the riot. The repression was harsh. It was 6,000 cars and 1,000 buildings burnt. The police took into custody about 4,000 people. One third was under 18. Around 1,300 were convicted for the riots, mostly jail time. Many of them were arrested and sentenced to for no reasons. For example, there were many cases of young men taking a can in a supermarket or what during a looting, and who were convicted to 6, 8, 10 months of jail because of this, who actually had to do it. So it was a pure intimidation towards the inhabitants of these poor areas, and that's what they called justice, the ruthless revenge of the bourgeoisie against rioters who threatened property and social order. Many young people were crippled by rubber bullets shots. At least one was killed, another left in coma. And you might have seen the picture, the very shocking picture of Eddie, who's a 22-year-old guy, who was disfigured by a rubber bullet shot and literally, so he misses half of his skull now, one third of his skull, which... and he was literally like shot with a rubber bullet and then taken to a back alley and tortured by three guys of the police in the dark. And guess what? 2 days ago, one of the three cops got freed because, so normal. And we just learned a few days ago that the families of some tenants who participated in the riots, young ones, are being evicted from their social housing. Evicted because one of the young ones threw something at the police, and who encouraged it? The interior minister himself, because he wrote letters to all the police stations to explain that we should evict families of people who have participated in the riot. So it really reaches like levels of crazy. So now, how can we analyze this revolt from a revolutionary socialist point of view? First, the reasons. The main grounds, of course, of the riots are the bad and social situation, economic situation of this youth. Poverty, inflation, joblessness, bad working conditions, etc. And, of course, police violence. The riots are the backlash of Macron's policy and the governments before him. The backlash of having 10 million people out of 60, because there are 60 inhabitants in France, that are under the poverty line in the country. France is the sixth richest country in the world, but one-sixth of its population is under the poverty line. But the shape of this revolt was not usual methods of the class struggle, for sure. We could say that burning police stations or city halls is a kind of counterattack against the state. Maybe it was in the mind of rioters, we don't know. But burning your neighbor's car, your school, or the few public services of your community is probably not the best way to fight capitalism. But in any case, they expressed their anger against all the injustice they suffer, even if it wasn't with a conscious strategy. So the most important thing is to see is that these revolts come from a fraction of the working class. That is really an important idea because sometimes the riots created a negative response amongst workers for different reasons. And that's where you can feel the importance as revolutionaries to be implanted in the working class, to organize groups of revolutionaries in the workplaces. Because it was the only way to help. It was quite impossible without that to engage with the young men who were burning cars or attacking the police by night, not on the spot, while everything was going down. And that, by the way, they didn't need advice on how to burn a car. And I wouldn't have been able to give it, unfortunately. But of course, we tried. But you really have to imagine that while it is definitely political, it took the form of a riot. So without any form of expression, let only political expression. Even in Nanterre, where we have comrades that have been living there for decades, it was impossible to connect with them. But what was possible is to discuss it with the rest of the working class, our colleagues, the people we know and organize every week. And that was really important. And it was not an easy task. But it was all the more important to do so. From the organized side of the working class, there was a lot of misunderstanding. Some people were saying, why are they burning cars or buses or my car, even like the car of their neighbors? They just want chaos. Or some had resentment, like why didn't they wake up before when we were fighting against the government for the pension reform? That was something really strong. So it launched a lot of debates in the working class. Did they attack the right targets? If we cannot beat Macron with demonstration, maybe we should revolt like rioters. What else can we do? How, etc., etc. But every time they were saying, discussing the form of this revolt, we were answering, but what are you doing? Like, it's not just support. Like, what are you doing against police violence, racism, etc., etc.? So, problem also is that the media and politics, per usual, didn't help. On the contrary, they flooded the public debate with racist, xenophobic assumptions of the riot. But still, the hostile reaction in the working class was less, way less than in 2005, for example, which was pretty encouraging. Because there was also a deep understanding. One of our comrades from the rail work, I wanted to tell you because it's interesting, catched a discussion between two colleagues of him. The first one was saying, can you imagine you wake up in the morning and you realize your car is burnt by rioters? And the second one was answering, can you imagine you wake up in the morning and you realize you have no kid anymore because the police shot him? So it was really the kind of discussions we had for all this time. And that kind of idea, we actively push forward, denouncing the police injustice, the fact that it's all rooted in capitalism. And widely, the solidarity against police violence was real. The riots were seen as a justifiable reaction. And that's where you can see the kind of maturing that happened with the social movement against pension reform. Because workers have been so much beaten up and terrorized by the police that they understood and supported much more the young rioters this time around. And I do think that when we hear big words like intersectionality and race and class, etc., which maybe you're much more used to than in France, but I think that's what we're describing. Because then you have to be consistent. As an organization, you need to be very well rooted and implanted among the working class, because otherwise you can't have these discussions about all that. Otherwise you can't encourage the conscious that there is a unity of the class. And for example, this riot was part of the revolts of the working class. So what is to be done in such a context? Should we bring some claims in the movement that has no claim, formulated claims? What could we claim? Disarm the police, reform the police? I don't think so, because there can't be any good police under capitalism, that's for sure. But of course, all what I'm hearing this weekend about abolition and campaigns to defund the police, etc., resonates with that, because it's those kind of discussions. The NPM, my organization, has for years put a slogan forward that says simply, police kills. And it seems very dumb and simple, but it raised hell when we did it on the media, etc., because everybody was so shocked, except, of course, people who were living it every day on the street. So after the riots, the authority of Macron has been more challenged. He's under pressure, of course, from the population, but also pressure from the cops and the right-wing parties who demand more repression. And Macron is fully playing this game because a few days ago he said we need to re-civilize the country, which is of course a very far-right notion, as if they were savages or I don't know what. And then he said we need order, 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 like in his public declaration. So that's almost, voilà, reminds us of other times of history. And it shows that Macron's government needs its policemen, maybe for a next social movement, and it's ready to give it full permission. But what is sure is that the riots are a reaction to France's neo-colonial policy, which cannot be understood without understanding the role of French imperialism in their history, what it played and what it continues to play. So we could talk later, maybe, if we don't have time, about the coup in Niger and Gabon, if you're interested in, because that's also voilà, a setback, kind of setback for the French imperialism, but not so much. And there are, of course, a lot of competition with other imperialism in that region. But all this is not really in the interest of the working class there. So that's obviously an interesting topic, but maybe a really place for the discussion.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.